God, please help us to set aside everything we think we already know about you, about the big book, about the step being studied tonight, about our disease. And God, we ask you especially to help us to set aside everything we already think we know about you, so that we can remain teachable and humble tonight, and that if it be your will, we'll have a spiritual experience. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Your will, God, not ours, be done. Amen. Okay, we are on Bill's story on page 7. And if you go down, we are on page 7, paragraph 2. Okay. It relieved me somewhat to learn that in alcoholics, the will is amazingly weakened when it comes to combating liquor. So you can put whatever your addiction is there, spending, men, alcoholics, drug addicts, drugs, whatever your addiction is, put it underneath liquor. So what he's talking about is this is his first hospitalization, and he was told in the hospital, and he was relieved to be told that alcoholics and all addicts have weakened, they're very weak when it comes to combating their addiction. For me, it's food, alcohol, people. So it often remains strong in other respects. So you can say to yourself, why is it that I cannot resist dessert when I can resist buying that expensive dress when I know I don't have enough money? So what you're saying is that you're not a spendaholic, but you're a foodaholic, you know? You don't care about alcohol, but you can't pass up a piece of candy. Okay? So what you do is you compare yourself. Yeah, well, I'm not like that drunk. But when you really get honest, you're just like that drunk. That drunk over there that's making a fool out of himself because he's drunk, he can't stop drinking. But if you really get honest with yourself, you can't stop buying scratch tickets. You can't stop speeding. You can't stop overeating. You can't stop gossiping. I mean, you can put in any negative behavior. It's the very same thing. Okay. My incredible behavior in the face of a desperate desire to stop was explained. Okay, so he's getting self-knowledge. Understanding myself now, which we call self-knowledge, I fared forth in high hope. Okay, so he's saying, oh, so I get it now. I understand. Okay, so now I know, and I don't ever have to drink again. For 3 or 4 months, the goose hung high, which meant he didn't drink. I went to town regularly and even made a little money. Surely this was the answer, self-knowledge. Okay, so let's talk about self-knowledge. How many people have gotten DUIs and said to their, you know, family, I will never drink and drive again? They have self-knowledge that if they drink and they drive, they'll get pulled over and they'll lose their license. How many people gained 20 count because they just kind of, you know, lost, you know, they went away on vacation and, you know, they came back and they just was in the habit of, you know, eating after supper and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then they went to a, you know, commercial weight loss and they lost the weight. And they said, I'll never let myself gain weight again. How many people said, I'm on a budget now because I got into trouble with credit cards and I will never, never go into debt again? They get into trouble, they realize what they have to do, and they say, I will never get into trouble again. And sure enough, 3 or 4 months later, they're doing the old behavior again. Okay? That's self-knowledge. When you have self-knowledge that something is not a good behavior, and you can stop doing that behavior, then you're not addicted to it. But when you know that something is damaging to you and you can't stop doing it, then that's an addiction. Doesn't have to even be a physical addiction. A lot of times, it's just a physical, okay? I mean, just a physical, just an emotional. Okay, self-knowledge. Next paragraph, page 7, paragraph 3. But it was not. What was not? Self-knowledge. But self-knowledge was not. For the frightful day came when I drank once more. The curve of my declining moral and bodily health fell off like a ski jump. After a time, I returned to the hospital. This was the finish, the curtain, it seemed to me. My weary and despairing wife. Let's talk about that. My weary and despairing wife, or my weary and despairing husband. My weary and despairing children. Let's talk about our families. Don't for 1 second think that our addiction did not have an effect on the people who love us. If you're married, it affected your spouse. If you had children, it affected your children. It affected your parents. It affected your coworkers. It affected your friends. They were affected by your disease. And when you get into recovery and get well, the greatest gift that you can give them is to suggest that they have been affected by you and that they too would benefit by a recovery program and that you could suggest that they go to Al-Anon. You could offer to take them to Al-Anon and you could take them to maybe 3. And then it's totally up to them whether they continue or not. You take them, you show them, you introduce them. Then you get on with your own program. You live your own program. Your own program is living amends. And that's all you can do is living amends. But that's what you owe them because you did affect their life. And you did affect their life in a negative way. And really and truly, living amends is not enough. And you're getting well through a 12-step recovery program. And lots of marriages do not make it. Lots of relationships do not make it because they have been negatively affected by your disease and you get well and they don't get well and they stay resentful and they stay unhappy, and they stay getting sicker and sicker and sicker, because you never go in a spiral upward. You always go in a spiral downward. And so it would really be to your benefit to introduce them to Al-Anon in a very positive way. Years and years ago, when I was in AA, there was a lot of talk in AA about Al-Anon being the enemy camp. Can you imagine? Oh, my goodness. They were so misled and had such a misunderstanding. Al-Anon, it was just the opposite of the enemy camp. Al-Anon was probably the greatest gift that they ever could have been given, because with them in recovery and getting well, if the person that they loved and living with is not in recovery and getting well, their home life was, you know, really going to be jeopardized. So I can't say enough. I mean, Bill says it beautifully here. You know, my weary and despairing wife. Well, I had a weary and despairing husband, believe me. And in my case, I did him a favor and left him. In fact, I left two husbands. And the husband that I'm with now never saw me compulsively eat. I've been abstinent. I've had slips, but he's never been involved at all. And thank God. And they were not with sugar and flour or anything like that. They were basically technical slips. But none of the course, this husband has never, and I'm grateful for that. But my son 23, he had been the victim of me being in the food. And, you know, I've had to make amends. And I did bring my son to Alateen. My son went to Alateen for 4 years. And I'm very grateful that I brought him to Alateen. And then there came a day when he needed his own recovery program. And he was extremely comfortable at his first meeting, and he's in recovery now over 2.5 years. So I can't say enough about encouraging your family members to go to the supportive groups. I know if you're a drug addict and go to NA, they have Al-Anon for NA. I think it's, I forget what it's called, but anyway, I can't say enough for those programs. Okay. So my weary and despairing wife was informed that it would all end with heart failure during delirium tremens, or I would develop a wet brain, perhaps within a year. He would soon have to give me over to the undertaker or the asylum. They did not need to tell me. I knew and almost welcomed the idea. It was a devastating blow to my pride. I'm on page 8 now. I, who had thought so well of myself and my abilities, of my capacity to surmount obstacles, was cornered at last. Now, this is good, because Bill, who thought so highly of himself, big ego, remember we talked about that, he's starting to talk about being cornered, which is good. He's starting to hit bottom, which is a blessing. When you start to hit bottom, it's a blessing. Now I was to plunge into the dark. Good. He's ready to start thinking about powerlessness, joining that endless possession of thoughts who had gone on before. So your first word to look up tonight is SOTS, S-O-T-S. Very old word for a drunk. SOTS. Okay. Let me circle that in my book. Let me keep track of what words I've told you to look up. I thought of my poor wife. Remember, when Bill was drinking, there was no Al-Anon. Bill's wife was the co-founder of Al-Anon. There had been much happiness after all. What would I not give to make amends? But that was over now. Okay, page 8, paragraph 1. Okay, now we're getting to step 1. All the steps, by the way, I talked about in Bill's story, all the steps. And we're starting now on him coming to the conclusion of powerlessness. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Okay, second word, morass. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. He had met his match in alcohol. I met my match in alcohol. I met my match in food also. I also met my match in loving an alcoholic. All three of those things brought me to my knees. I think of the three, the most painful is loving an alcoholic. That was the most painful. In fact, I'm almost crying just thinking about it. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. Can you identify with that? Okay, that's your first sentence. That's your first writing assignment. I want you to write on that paragraph. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. And then you can put in whatever you want. Alcohol was my master. I think tonight I would actually put loving an alcoholic was my master. I think that's where I am tonight. That's what brings up the emotion in me tonight. So I want you to write on that sentence. I want you to write on that paragraph. What is your experience with this paragraph? Okay, trembling. I stepped from the hospital a broken man. Good. That's what we need to be. So let me ask you a question. You know what it is to feel broken? Are you willing to admit that you were broken? Can you still remember that feeling of being broken? I remember that feeling of being broken. I would wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. And as I was walking from my bed to the bathroom, I would just pray. I would say, God, take care of my son. I'm just going to tell you who it was. It was my son. I'd say, God, it would be about 2 in the morning, and I knew he would be out trying to get drugs or doing drugs or something. And I'd say, God, wherever he is, I know he's probably out. Please take care of him. Because I can't. Thy will not mine be done. It was like a mantra. I give him to you. He's yours. You only let me have him to borrow. He's your child. And I just kept doing that. And so I'd go to the bathroom, and then, you know, I'd say another prayer, and and I'd go back to bed. And then I'd, you know, get up again, because I get up a lot to go to the bathroom, and I'd pray again, and I'd pray again, and I'd pray all day. And I had absolutely no choice. There was absolutely no choice, or I would have gone crazy. I would have absolutely gone crazy. I went to 2, 3, 4 Al-Anon meetings a day. Any Al-Anon meeting I could go to, I went to. I talked and talked and talked and talked, and I prayed and prayed and prayed. I was a broken woman. That's what it was. And I got a miracle. I got an absolute miracle. Within about 3 months of doing that, I got an absolute miracle. I was released. I was absolutely, positively released from that insane pain of worrying about my child. It just was gone. I really let go and let God. So I know what it is to be a broken woman, and I also know what it is to have God put me back together again, because He took my brokenness from me. And I'm very intense when it comes to my relationship with God. I'm very intense about it. It's the most important thing in my life without exception, because I don't ever want to go back to being that broken woman again. And I can go in a minute. So I don't take it lightly. I had like the biggest miracle happened to me. And it was the second miracle I had, because I couldn't get back-to-back abstinence. And God did the same thing with me with the food. He finally took the food away, and I've had back-to-back. February 8th will be 5 years. And I've been in food recovery for 31 years. And, you know, I never binged, and I never went into, you know, I can tell you, I never did this, I never did that, never did this. But the truth is that when push came to shove, I always ate extra food. I didn't weigh and measure my food without exception. And that's not back-to-back abstinence. If you don't weigh, for me, if you don't weigh and measure your food, then you're eating extra food instead of going to God. And in February 8th, I'll have weighed and measured every morsel of food. So I never ate any extra food for 5 years, and that was another miracle that God gave me. Just like I don't worry about my son anymore. But I know that it could come back in a minute, in a split second. So I know what it is to be a broken woman. And so I'm asking you, do you know what it is to be a broken man? Do you know what it is to be a broken woman? And have you had the release? Because knowing what it is step one. I know what it is to be powerless. I know. I felt it. And that's what you have to feel to be at step one. It's like you've got to be able to say, no words can tell of the loneliness and the despair I found in the bitter morass of self-pity. That is step one. You are face down in the bitter morass of self-pity, and you are about ready to die. You're drowning, quicksand, and you're going down fast. You have met your match. Okay, then it said, fear sobered me for a bit. Then came the insidious insanity of that first drink. And on Armistice Day in 1934, I was off again. Everyone became resigned to the certainty that I would have to be shut up somewhere or would stumble along to a miserable end. How dark it is before the dawn. It has to be that way. It has to be that way. It has to be so dark and so unbearable. That's what step one is. So dark and so unbearable that there is nowhere to go except to step two. And if there's, if you think that there's anywhere else to go, like let's just say a food addict, if you think that there's still another diet, there's still this, the stomach reduction, there's still Weight Watchers, there's still Christmas. Oh, I just can't until after Christmas. I'll wait till Weight Watchers has its winter special. I can't take my scale to a restaurant. It's too embarrassing. Whatever. If you think that there's any way else, then you're not at step one. How dark it is before the dawn. The dawn is step two, and then three, and four, and five. It's the dawn is the horizon of the steps. It all starts in the pit, the bitter pit of complete hopelessness. Complete hopelessness and powerlessness. That's step one. You're supposed to feel miserable. This time in the steps, people leave my house and they go, I feel worse than when I came. And I say, good. That's how you're supposed to feel. Step one is the miserable step. And if you don't feel miserable, then why are you going to do all this work? You know? It's like, yeah, I when I talk about step one, I want to get to the point where I still cry, that I still remember how awful it was, how awful it was. I don't ever, ever, ever want to forget how awful it was. Because if I forget how awful it was, then I will think that I don't have to work my butt off. And I have to work harder today at my recovery than I did yesterday and the day before. I cannot live on yesterday's recovery, and I have to work just a little bit harder today. Nope, it doesn't get easier. Nope, it just gets more precious. My recovery today gets more precious. That's why I work harder, because I'll do anything to keep it. Will you? Will you keep it? Will you do anything to keep it? Is your recovery the most precious possession that you have? It is for me. I'd give you anything in this house. You can have my couch. You can have my car, my computer. You can have anything. My rings, you can take my rings. Not that I have anything valuable. I don't even have a diamond. I didn't want one. But you can't take my recovery. Is that how you feel? Because if you don't, you won't do anything to keep it. And that's what you got to do. If you want to do this big book step study process, you got to want to do anything. Because believe me, you're going to have to do the hardest thing in the world, and that is look at yourself. You're going to have to look at your soul. Okay, how dark it is before the dawn. But boy, that dawn, let me just, because I've been really a little dark here. Let me talk to you about the dawn. The dawn is awesome. Life on the other side. If any of you can come to Monday and Tuesday, the workshops, because they're on the other side now. They're making amends. And they're a happy bunch of people. They're on the dawn. They're on the other side. They're feeling pretty darn good about themselves, pretty darn good about their recovery. Life on the other side is just fantastic. You know, it is really good. It's precious. Life is precious with recovery. Okay. Next sentence. In reality, that was the beginning of my last debauch. Okay, third word, debauch. These are old words. You don't hear these words anymore, not even in AA anymore. Debauch. I was soon to be catapulted. Fourth word, catapulted. I was soon to be catapulted into what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. Okay, circle. Fourth dimension of existence. Fourth dimension of existence is spirituality. It's you now live working for God. So put out into the column, put a line, working for God. That's the fourth dimension. Okay, when you go to work tomorrow and you do what you're supposed to do, you're not doing it to please your boss in the next office. You're doing it for God. God's your boss. When you do the next right action, you're doing it for God. That's what is being catapulted into the fourth dimension. You live on a higher plane. You know, when somebody gives you $10 change for a dollar, you bring it back because that's not your money. That's God's money. And God needs you to bring that money back because he needs to use that money. So that's what being catapulted in the fourth dimension is. You're doing things because it's you and God now. It's like you're into God's realm and not into the earthly realm. That's the fourth dimension. So very exciting. Okay. I was to know happiness. Okay, so when you live in God's dimension, okay, you're going to know happiness, peace, and usefulness. Now, this is a promise. This is what happens when we come into the dawn, all right? We get catapulted into the fourth dimension, and this is what you know. You know happiness, peace, and usefulness. In a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. And that's been my experience. My life is full of happiness, peace, and usefulness. And I have a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. Okay, next paragraph. So that's a promise. Right there. Near the end of that bleak November, I sat drinking in my kitchen. With a certain satisfaction, I reflected there was enough gin concealed about the house to carry me through the night and the next day. My wife was at work. I wondered whether I dared hide a full bottle of gin near the head of our bed. I would need it before daylight. My musings was interrupted by the telephone, the cheery voice of an old school friend. Okay, underneath old school friend, write Ebby. Ebby, E-B-B-Y, that's his old school friend. It was his lifelong sponsor. Asked if he might, next page, page 9, come over. He was sober. It was years since I could remember Ebby coming to New York in that condition. What condition? Being sober. Ebby was an alcoholic like Bill, but he was sober. Now, how did this happen? I was amazed. Rumor had it that Ebby had been committed for alcoholic insanity. I wondered how he had escaped. Of course, Ebby would have dinner and then I could drink openly with him. I'm mindful of his welfare. Okay, notice the self-centeredness and the selfishness. I'm mindful of Ebby's welfare. He even writes it. He even realizes it. He's unmindful. He doesn't care about Ebby's welfare because Ebby's sober. I thought only of recapturing the spirit of other days. See, when we're drinking or when we're using, we like to have other people using along with us. So he doesn't care about Ebby, that Ebby's sober. He only cares that he wants to have somebody to drink along with him. There was that time, and then he's reminiscing now. There was that time when Ebby and I had chartered an airplane to complete a JAG. Okay, and I don't think you'll find a JAG in the dictionary. So a JAG is a bender. Okay, that's slang. So put next to JAG, bender, just so you'll know, or drunk. Okay, the very thing, an oasis. Oh, sorry. His coming, who's his? Ebby's coming was an oasis in this dreary desert of futility. The very thing, an oasis. Drinkers are like that. Okay, so here's the story about Ebby. The door opened, and he stood there, Ebby, fresh-skinned and glowing, because he was sober. He was sober about, let's see, I have it here, about 2 months. So he had cleared up, and remember, they were young men then. You know, he was in his early 20s. So they bounce back, you know, young people bounce back. There was something about his eyes. He was different. What had happened? I pushed a drink across the table. He refused it. Disappointed but curious, I wondered what had got into the fellow. He wasn't himself. Come, what's this all about? I queried. He looked straight at me. Simply but smiling, he said, I've got religion. So next to I've got religion, put God. He found a higher power. That's why he looked so different. I was aghast. So that was it. Last summer, an alcoholic crackpot. Now I suspected a little cracked about religion. He had that starry-eyed look. Yes, the old boy was on fire, all right, but bless his heart, let him rant. Besides, my gin would last longer than his preaching. But he did no ranting. In a matter-of-fact way, he told how two men had appeared in court, persuading the judge to suspend his commitment. They had told of a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. And look at, Bill put an exclamation point. It worked. This was 3 years later, and Bill was still amazed that he put an exclamation point. It worked. He was still shocked and surprised. He couldn't believe that it worked so well on Ebby and that it was working so well on him. A religious idea, and a practical program of action. And that is how the AA program was born. Ebby Thatcher came to Bill Wilson with a religious idea and a practical program of action. And AA was born within Bill Wilson's mind. Bill Wilson was brilliant. And he had enthusiasm. One, he was young. Two, he was brilliant. And three, he was a born salesman. Do you think that God knew all of those things? You bet your life. God handpicked Bill Wilson. Absolutely handpicked Bill Wilson. He was the perfect man to start AA. And you know how Bill Wilson was like a big ego? Many years later, after Bill really matured, I think Bill was in his 70s or something, Time magazine wanted to put Bill on its cover and make Bill Wilson the man of the year. Now, can you imagine if they had done that in the beginning? I mean, that's all Bill ever wanted, was to be man of the year, right? He declined it because he truly was now living in the fourth dimension. And he knew that he couldn't do that. Number one, it would break anonymity, which was the spiritual foundation of the program. But he knew that it would probably ruin his sobriety because he knew he had ego problems. And if he ever was on the cover of Time magazine and voted the man of the year, he probably wouldn't be able to live with himself. So anyway, so Abby told him a simple religious idea and a practical program of action. That was 2 months ago, and the result was self-evident. It worked. Abby, he, had come to pass his experience along to me. Isn't that what we do? Isn't that what I'm doing with you right now? I'm passing my experience along to you. And it happened all those years ago, from Abby to Bill, then Bill to Dr. Bob, then Dr. Bob and Bill to another Bob in the hospital, alcoholic number three, and then alcoholic number four, and then so on and so on and so on. You know, all of us in AA, we all can trace our lineage back to Dr. Bob and Bill somehow, and then to Bill and Abby. That's why this story is so important. So anyway, Abby had come to pass his experience along to me. Page 10. If I cared to have it. Now this is very, very important. You and I, we pass our experience on. We share our experience, strength, and hope. We break our anonymity. We go on commitments. Now I'm talking AA now. We go on commitments. We speak. We can go to, I mean, there's any different ways we pass on our experience. We put out our hands. That's all we can do. Then the other person has to care to have it. It is a two-way street. I put my hand out, they have to put their hand out. They have to want it as much as I want to give it. So it really is a give and a take. Okay, if I cared to have it. I was shocked, but interested. Certainly I was interested. I had to be, for I was hopeless. There's the word. Bill was hopeless, and he knew it. Thank you, God. What if Abby had come and he hadn't reached? He hadn't had those 5 years. He hadn't had that experience of trying to jump out the window. He hadn't gone to the psychiatric hospital twice before. He hadn't had those days where he stood in front of the medicine cabinet. Should he take the medicine and kill himself? He had reached that dark, 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 hopeless morass of self-pity where he didn't want to live and he didn't want to die. So he was really ready, thank God. Okay? Thank you, God, for I was hopeless. And then he, Abby talked for hours. Childhood memories rose before me. I could almost hear the sound of the preacher's voice as I sat on still Sundays way over there on the hillside. There was that prophet. Okay, next word is prophet. Prophet and then temperance. So prophet and temperance pledge I never signed. My grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folk and their doings. His insistence that the Spears really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen. his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died. These recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. Okay, I'm going to explain this. On Sunday afternoon, Bill went with his grandfather. Bill lived with his grandfather and grandmother. He had a mother. His mother and his father, believe it or not, was divorced. Divorce was so unusual back then. But anyway, Bill's mother and father were divorced. And the mother lived two or three houses down from where the mother and the father owned a very famous hotel. That's where the Wilson Inn, where they have Big Book Step Study conferences and AA conferences up in Dorset, Vermont is. It's beautiful, absolutely reconstructed. It's absolutely gorgeous and run by all people in AA. And so he went with his grandfather up on a hill, and the grandfather did not believe in organized religion. The grandfather wasn't an atheist. He believed in God, but he just didn't believe in quote-unquote religions. So what he's saying here is that, in that time, they had the temperance movement. It was where it was against the law to drink and have alcohol. And what the prophet temperance pledge was that the religious people asked you to go to church and sign a piece of paper that you would not drink. And the grandfather felt that that was not the right, just that it had nothing to do with religion. Why should, you know, the religious people tell him whether he should drink or not drink? So the grandfather differed with, the church, you know, telling him what to do in his personal life, basically. And so what he was saying is, my grandfather's good-natured contempt of some church folks and their doings. So he was contemptuous of the church interfering with personal issues. And then he was saying his insistence that the Spears really had their music, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen. So the father believed in God. This is how I get it. The father believed in God, believed in, you know, certain theological things like creation and things, but he wanted to be a free thinker, that he didn't want to have somebody saying, you have to believe this. And he didn't want to be put in a box. And that's what he was telling his grandson. Like, be a free thinker, and you can think any way that you want to think. And don't let them put you in a box. So that's what I get out of that. Okay. And we are going to stop there, 12:408. So we're going to stop there. Okay, but I didn't finish the sentence. I didn't finish the paragraph. Okay, but his denial of the preacher's right to tell him how he must listen, his fearlessness as he spoke of these things just before he died, these recollections welled up from the past. They made me swallow hard. So we're going to stop right there. Stop at the beginning of page 10, paragraph 2. Okay, so the words that I'm going to ask you to look up are thoughts, morass, debauch, catapulted, prophet, and temperance. And I'll put them on the website. And the question is, go back to write on, go back to page 8, paragraph 1, and you don't have to write the whole sentence, the whole paragraph. But I want you to write on your experience with this. No words can tell of the loneliness and despair I found in that bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. So what, it's a step one question. So basically, what's your experience with this? How do you relate to this paragraph?